The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 in Irvine. Greetings, this is Katrina Kirkaby, and I'm here with Tina Spindler, and we're your host today of In the Garden with UCC Master Gardeners. Welcome, Tina.
Hi, Katrina. Happy summer.
Happy summer. Happy warm summer.
Yeah, I know. It's getting warmer and warmer, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness. It is. Sure is. Well, today we're going to be talking about what to do in our garden in July.
Yeah, July is, you know, can I be honest?
Yes.
July is not my favorite gardening month.
Well, you know what? It's not mine either.
I think probably for the same reason, because it gets too darn hot.
It gets really hot.
The only month I think I like less in the garden is August. So.
Exactly.
So today I think what we should talk about is how to survive July, how to get our gardens to survive July, and especially in our veggie gardens, because the one thing I do like about July is very, very abundant food from the garden. So we should talk about how to keep that going.
Oh, you know, that's one of my favorite subjects.
Yeah, absolutely. So what have you got in your garden, in your veggie garden? Let's talk about veggie gardens first. That is producing now that you're eating and loving like crazy.
Tomatoes.
Yay!
I love tomatoes and zucchini and cucumbers. It's just my garden's having a party right now.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I know. It looks like a fiesta and an island of abundance. We eat out of the garden every single day now.
Same here.
Yeah.
Just absolutely love it. It's a wonderful time. We usually start early in the morning because I personally can't handle the heat of the day.
Absolutely. So that's one of our first tips, is to tend to your garden first thing. I know I like to go for a walk a couple mornings a week and do it real early in the summer, and I'm back usually by 7:30 or 8, and I head right into the garden in my walking clothes, put in an hour or so, and then I come inside.
Yes, I do that too, and also later in the day, my house is on the north side of the hill, so I have some afternoon shadows and some shade, so I'll do a little bit of gardening later in the day because it stays so light.
Yeah, that's a good idea too. It stays light till what, 8:30 or so at night, so
yeah.
If you have dinner and you still have a little bit of energy, it's a great time to get out there and get a few chores done.
I kind of work around the shadows.
Yeah, exactly. Stay out of the sun. Or wear your hat, wear sunscreen, all of that good stuff. But let's talk about how to keep those gardens productive.
Tina, do you want to talk about vegetables first? Or,
yeah, let's talk about vegetables since we're kind of on that topic already. So Karina has a lot of tomatoes, and so do I. And I'll tell you what I've been discovering. I think I mentioned this in a previous show, had a tomato that overwintered. Actually, two tomatoes that overwintered, because we never really got cold weather. And those things, of course, are producing like mad because they didn't have to get planted and wait to grow. They were already growing. But one of the ways that I have kept them going is to pay attention to them and actually do a little tomato pruning. Do you ever do that, Katrina?
Oh, yes. Tell us about pruning.
Yeah. So tomatoes, as we all know, can get totally out of control. And when we have them on in those cages, they get all tangled up and they grow taller than the cage and they flop over and so on and so forth. And so we end up with this kind of big mess, and maybe we get some diseases because there's not good air circulation going through that big old jumble of tomato plants. So one of the ways that I have been able to get and keep my tomatoes healthy is to grow them on a trellis, a horizontal trellis, rather than letting them grow in the cages. I've been tying them up to horizontal trellises. And so they get taller than the trellis, but then what I do is I just grab that branch and I tip it over and tie it to the top of the trellis, and so I keep letting it grow horizontally, almost like espaliering a tomato plant. And then the other thing I've been doing is, as the leaves yellow, our listeners may or may not know that yellow plants actually attract bugs. And so when you have a lot of yellow leaves on your plants, you're likely to be attracting some pests to those plants. So that's the other thing I've been doing. In addition to keeping those rangy tomato plants tied up neatly to that trellis, I've been pulling off and throwing away all of the yellowing leaves and any dead leaves that are dropping on the ground. And I'll tell you what, even though we had a lot of June gloom last month, which usually starts, you know, giving you those diseases on your tomatoes, those fungal diseases, I've had a pretty healthy, disease-free group of tomatoes this year.
Yeah, we're doing the same thing. And Tina, you told me a while back about pulling the yellow leaves off, and I have been doing that religiously. And I don't know why. It could be pulling the yellow leaves off, but we're pest-free right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I really think that it is really helpful. And I do the same thing to other things. I still have kale growing from last fall, but I love kale, so I'm trying to baby it. And every time I see a yellow leaf, you know, the older leaves will start to turn yellow, and I notice that those are the ones where I see a few aphids and things on. So, man, I'm out there ripping those yellow leaves off, picking up the ones that have fallen underneath the plants, and throwing them away, and keeping that garden really clean and tidy, and I think that is really helping control the pests and diseases.
I agree.
Yeah. So, that's a tip for July. Continue to keep your garden tidy, and get those yellow leaves and dead leaves that have fallen up off the ground.
You know, Tina, you mentioned a couple minutes ago about overwintering your tomatoes. I think the listeners need to be aware of, too, is depending on the sun and where your tomatoes are. Now, when I tried to overwinter, my tomato garden is in the shade in the wintertime, and it just won't happen. So if you do, this is something to talk about later in the season, too. But if you do try to overwinter, make sure you do have sun, because it doesn't work have sun.
To tell you the truth, I have never overwintered a tomato before. I think the only reason I was fortunate enough to do it this year is that we didn't have a really cold winter. And in addition to that, we had some stupidly hot days in January. So and February, you know, it seemed like 1 week every month we would get these really silly hot days. And so I think what happened, and my tomato garden is in the sun, full sun, all year long. So obviously if mine had been in the shade, it would have just fizzled out. But because it is in the full sun and we got those hot days periodically throughout the winter, these tomato plants continue to live, because they actually are a perennial plant. They're a tender perennial, which means they're frost sensitive and they'll die if there's a frost. But since we didn't get any frost this year, they are still going strong right now. But generally, I don't even try. It's just easier to plant new plants, you know, in March and start fresh every year. But good point, so that I'm not encouraging people to try to do that. And then
no,
say,
I wanted to do it.
Why did she let me do that?
I really wanted to do it. I thought this year I was going to do it. It just didn't work.
Didn't happen, yeah.
You know, they say that plants need sun, and that was a good case of it.
Yeah.
It just didn't work without having enough sun.
Right plant, right place, right time, right? That's our Master Gardener motto, one of them. So let's talk a couple more things about veggies. If we want these plants, if they look like they're doing pretty well, they're still growing, they're getting new blossoms on, you can help them continue by giving them a little food. So if they're actively growing, then go ahead and give them a little food. If you've been on a fertilizing program, and we hope that you have been and that you're writing down on a calendar or putting it on your iPhone when you fertilize, because depending on the fertilizer you're using, the instructions will tell you, you know, once every 30 days, or if it's a slow-release fertilizer, once every 3 months. So hopefully when you're fertilizing, you're marking it down. But if you haven't fertilized for a while, you might want to consider giving your veggies a little food so that they keep on producing. Yeah, and that can be in the form of a granular fertilizer that you put on the ground and lightly scratch into the ground in between the plants, which we call side dressing. Or you can use a liquid fertilizer, like fish emulsion is a good organic liquid fertilizer, and your plants will all love you for a little drink of that. That'll help them keep on producing.
Be producing and being happy. I have a question for you, Tina, that I was asked.
Sure.
Well, if a little fertilizer is good, how about if we give it a little bit more, like a lot of fertilizer? What happens when you over-fertilize?
Yes. You must have been talking to my husband, who thinks if a little is good, a lot is better, right?
I was talking about my husband.
Yeah. Yeah, they like to do things in a big way, right? No, we don't want to give too much fertilizer. We always want to follow the package directions because fertilizer can burn, especially if it is a synthetic or chemical fertilizer. Those are quite strong. And so if you use those, which I personally don't use in my veggie garden, I use those on my potted flowers, but for the veggie garden, I like to stick to organic fertilizers. But even organic fertilizers, if you use too much of them, they can burn your plants.
Now, for those of us who don't know what burn means, so if you fertilize your side dress with a little too much or a lot too much,
yeah.
How will that show in the plant?
It will look like the leaves are burned. The edges can get, you know, dry and crinkly, and they'll literally look like they were burned. So that's why it's called burning, is because the outward appearance looks like you've singed the plant. So, you know, it's an easy thing not to do. Just look at the instructions on the fertilizer that you're using and follow them, and you'll be good to go.
Yep, and they tell you that amount for a reason. They like to sell you more, but they know it'll burn if you give it more.
Yeah, and they don't want you to say, oh, this is a bad fertilizer, I'm never buying it again. So they do give you careful instructions so that you have success with that fertilizer.
So this is one of those cases where follow the directions.
Exactly, yeah, which my husband has a hard time doing. So anyway, he doesn't usually fertilize, I usually fertilize. He's good at digging holes because you can dig a hole, you know, as deep as you
hole.
Want. And
yeah.
Then you can fill it back up if it's too deep. So that's his job.
I have one of those at home, too, and he does a good job at it, too.
Yeah. Oh, and I love it because the older I get, the less I like to dig holes.
Oh, dear Lord.
But speaking of digging holes, we should let people know that they can still plant some veggies in July.
Yes. Tell us about that.
Well, I do like to plant if I can find a spot, because often the veggie garden's pretty full. But if I can find a spot, I like to plant a couple new tomatoes. And the reason I like to do that is because then if my other tomato plants start petering out, I have tomatoes that will probably take me all the way to December. And in the case of a no-chill winter, maybe even go through to the next year. But it's a good idea if you have the space to plant new batches of your warm season crops, your tomatoes, peppers, green beans. Usually I don't need to plant zucchini. The zucchini seem to be going. Although if you do plant zucchini in July, it will probably take you again into November or so.
We do that a lot.
Do you?
Yeah, it just helps to extend the season.
Yeah.
Now, Tina, at this point in time, I tend to plant from the little small guys in July. I don't plant from seed anymore. How about yourself?
Absolutely. Especially for tomatoes and the squash plants, do plant from transplants. If you try to plant from seed, you could be running into trouble because tomatoes really do, and peppers really do, like to have that hot weather to stimulate their growth and fruit production. And so if you plant from seed now and your plants aren't at the fruit production stage until the end of August or September, when the weather's starting to cool off, their production could be affected negatively. Whereas if you plant from the six packs, or even I'll even do the 4-inch plants, I'll splurge because I'm only going to do
get
a couple,
one.
Right?
Yeah,
one or two tomatoes or one or two peppers. So I'll splurge and get a 4-inch because odds are those actually even have some baby fruit on them already. And that way you put those in the ground and the nice hot days of summer stimulate growth and fruit production right away. And then as you go into the fall, when the fruit production is naturally going to decline, you already have the fruit on the vine, and in our nice warm fall days, it will just continue to ripen so that you have it to bring into the kitchen.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
I love extending the season. I love my summer vegetables. I love my winter vegetables, but I love extending seasons on both of them.
Well, and you always want what you can't have, right? So to have tomatoes in December is a special treat.
Oh, yeah.
So, and then the last thing we'll say about the veggie garden is water it. You can't get food. These plants produce fruits, and they can't do that unless they have adequate water. So we have suggested in the past that, you know, drip irrigation is the best, or soaker hoses, because it doesn't spray the leaves and you don't have a lot of evaporation. And then the other thing that we've been advising probably repeatedly so that people are sick of hearing it is that you do want to mulch your veggie beds to keep that water in the soil so it doesn't dry out quickly. And I know what your favorite thing to mulch with is straw in your veggie gardens, right?
I love straw. Straw is just easy to work with. It's easy to move around because I'm planting night. I can just pull it back. It's clean. It's just, and it's pretty.
Yeah, it does. It really polishes off the look of the bed. And then you don't have any weeds, too.
That's and it, it cools the bed down, too. You don't need as much water. It helps with weeds. It's just all around just easy to do.
Yeah.
Buy a bale of straw and you're set. Share a bale of straw.
Yeah, sure. It goes a long way.
It goes a long way.
It does go a long way. In fact, what I do is I get an empty plastic trash can and just store what I'm not using in the plastic trash can so that it doesn't fall apart, you know, all over the garden. And then when I need it, it's right there and I can pull it out. So
good point.
Yeah. So enjoy your veggie gardens and take care of them throughout the summer. They'll reward you with so much produce. And speaking of that, are you going on any vacations this summer?
We're going to go camping soon, so this is exciting. So let's talk about what we do on vacations. And I know Tina brought up an idea that I really liked. You know, first of all, why don't we talk about we have to be aware of when we go on vacation that there's somebody that our gardens are getting watered.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, do you usually hire a local kid or do you have a neighbor come? What's your go-to plan?
My go-to plan is I have a house sitter because I
have
three large Labrador retrievers. And so my house sitter loves house sitting. She loves my dogs and she waters my plants. So I'm set. So everybody's got to have a plan when they're going away, because if nobody's going to be watering or tending to your garden, it could die really fast.
That's right. And one thing that I've done, which is pretty effective if I'm gone for a week or less, is in my vegetable garden, as you know, I use soaker hoses that are attached to a faucet. And I put a timer on the faucet so that the faucet is on all the time, but the timer only releases the valve to the soaker hoses when the timer goes off.
Mm-hmm.
So by having the timer on there, I can make sure the veggie beds get watered all the time while I'm gone, whatever the frequency is for the type of weather that we're going to have. And then, of course, my regular landscaping is on an automatic sprinkler system, so that gets watered. But as you said, Katrina, it's a good idea, even if you don't have a house sitter, to see if you can get a neighborhood kid who wants to earn some money or a friend to come in and check, because you never know when there's going to be a glitch. And if you have pots, it's pretty tough to have an automatic sprinkler system on the pots that are randomly placed around your house. So for that reason, I usually have somebody come in at least twice a week to check on and make sure the automatic sprinkler systems are going off and to water the pots.
Yeah, I have everything on automatic, so I watch that, but I'm also concerned. One time we were away and I had a main line break.
Oh, that's not good. So leaks also, yeah.
So it's good for leaks. It's just good to having people over, and I set it out, and sometimes it gets a little hotter than it needs to be, and you know, having somebody come and check just makes life a lot easier.
Yeah, and I'll tell you how I get people to volunteer for this gig. I bribe them.
Ooh, how do you bribe them?
With tomatoes.
Ha! That's good stuff.
So find a neighbor who loves your homegrown tomatoes and say, hey, I'm going to be out of town next week. You know, if you come over, you can pick every tomato you see in the garden, and it's yours. And people get pretty excited about, you know, because they may not want to have their own garden because it's a lot of work and they just don't feel they have the time to devote to that. But boy, being able to just walk over to a garden that's fully productive in the summer and take home baskets of food is a pretty attractive...
Let me see. No planting, no weeds, no cultivating.
Picking.
No water bill.
Just turning on the water or making sure the sprinklers came on and then taking home the food and the flowers. I usually have beautiful Shasta daisies and black-eyed Susans and such, and roses, of course, blooming this time of year. So tell them, take all the flowers and edibles you want, and that's usually enough to get somebody to volunteer.
There you go. Now, you also change the subject a little bit, but not too far. Sometimes when you go on vacation, you find wonderful things to do with gardens.
I started doing this probably about 4 or 5 years ago, and my husband's been such a good sport about it, and he actually is enjoying it these days now. Whenever we go on a vacation, I get on the internet and I just Google gardens in Seattle. gardens in San Francisco, gardens in Oahu. Wherever it is we're traveling, I just Google that and you get the list of public gardens that are available in those areas, and then you can go on places like TripAdvisor and you know, type in the names of these gardens and see what people have to say about them. You know, sometimes they'll get like 2 stars and they'll say, you know, not very well cared for, kind of overgrown. But other times, you know, you'll see one that is 5-star, don't miss this, little known gem, no one was here, can't believe it because it's just so awesome. So we've had some wonderful experiences, and my husband is an amateur photographer, and so he's kind of gotten into it because we've gone to places, like in Seattle, there is a garden near the Space Needle that also exhibits Jalouli glass. I don't know if you know what that is, but it's a famous artist who does these glass, multicolored, enormous glass sculptures. And this garden is a combination of these glass sculptures and plants. And they've designed it. The landscapers who do this, I was just astounded, have coordinated the colors of the flowers with these glass sculptures. And the effect is stunning. Just absolutely stunning. So that's my favorite one that I've seen, is this one in Seattle. But, you know, they're as close as our own backyard. You know, in Corona Del Mar, you know, we have the wonderful Sherman Gardens, yes, which is worth a visit on your own or if you have folks visiting. Because in summer, we not only take vacations, but we also often get company.
And it's a nice place to have lunch, too.
Absolutely. They have a lovely cafe.
Lovely cafe.
So I just encourage everyone to do that before you go on a trip. It's also great if you have a family, because there are a lot of children's gardens around, or some of these public gardens have children's garden sections. And the one, for instance, just right here in San Diego, the San Diego Botanical Garden, has Darling, like a treehouse kind of thing that they've built in this children's garden, and a lot of hands-on activities and a little, looks like a creek, but it has like, you know, 1/4 of an inch of water running through it, but just enough for kids to
Whet their appetite,
literally.
Teach them young.
and of course, that botanical garden has wonderful drought-tolerant gardens, so it's a great place for adults to get educated about perhaps some more water-thrifty plants they could be using in their yards to accommodate this terrible drought that we're all in. But yeah, just do it before you go on a trip. A lot of these gardens are, you know, close by to wherever you're going, and it's just an hour side trip, you know?
It's fun to do, and you might get some great ideas for your own yard.
Great ideas, but even more than that, I'll tell you what, we went to Hawaii recently for a college graduation of a friend, and we went to a botanical garden that the University of Hawaii has on Oahu, and they have a lot of the plants that original native people used for, you know, their food and to make household items. And so we learned about, not just saw these beautiful tropical plants, which of course we all expect when we go to Hawaii. There were some amazing flowers that I'd never seen before. But we also got to see and learn about the culture of the early indigenous people. And so it was very educational, as well as just a beautiful place to spend a couple hours. So who knows? You know, your kids might even learn something if you take them.
And I think they're having fun.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's the other reason that these places are good for kids, is there's usually a ton of walking trails. And so if you've been cooped up driving or sitting on a plane, great place to let the kids run around and let off some steam. Yeah. So, yeah, that's my tip for vacationing, is get out and see some gardens.
Great idea.
Yeah. So let's see, what else should we talk about while we are on the subject of July?
Well, how about our flower gardens?
Sure.
What's going on in our flower gardens this time of year?
Well, you know, with this drought, we probably are cutting back a lot on our irrigation. And so our flower gardens this year may not be as lush and beautiful as they have in the past. In fact, we may have decided to let some of that go, and that's okay.
But one thing that I would suggest to folks, because we're all in a new learning experience, you know, these water cuts were just enacted in June last month, so July will be our second month of dealing with this. And after we get our June water bills, hopefully we're going to see what we need to do, whether we still need to cut more or whether we have a little bit that we can use. But whatever the result of that is, one thing that I'm planning on doing, although I haven't gotten my June water bill yet, I hope I can do this, is I'm planning on devoting my water that I have to irrigating those plants that are difficult to reproduce and valuable to me anyway. And that would be, for me, my fruit trees, some big established trees that I have. Now, fortunately, most of the trees on my property are California natives, and so I don't have to irrigate those in the summertime. But if you had a tree, you know, that you've had for years and years that does require some summer irrigation, I would run, you know, change out your overhead spray system. You know, that irrigation system is water wasteful. Convert it to drip and make sure that you're drip irrigating your trees and any shrubs you have that are important to you to keep. So I'm going to try and keep my roses because those are important to me.
And I have a beautiful maple tree. And it's been there forever in this jacaranda tree. Those trees are going to be on the top of my list.
Yeah.
You know, and a couple of the things I did is last year I packed my garden. You know, I just really packed it. And this year I didn't plant annuals. And my perennials did fine. And they were allowed to get a little bit bigger.
Sure.
And a lot of them were more drought tolerant. And I even took out some plants. And my yard actually, I think, is looking better.
There you go. And then I know you mulched. I know you told me.
Oh, big time mulch.
Before the show, you ordered, what, 13 cubic yards of mulch or something?
Yeah, I got 14 yards.
14 yards of mulch.
I have a big yard.
Yeah. And I got 12. My yard's a little smaller than Katrina's, but I still have a big yard, too.
And I got 40 a couple years ago.
Holy cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
But, you know, I still have some of that left, so this was just putting it on top of it. But the mulch just saves so much in my watering bill. And I'm really, I like to keep my yard as much as I can. So that will just help reduce.
And the interesting thing, you talk about packing. I know I'm so guilty of that. And my husband always says, you know, it's okay if you can see a patch of earth. It doesn't have to be completely covered. And he's right. Perennials and shrubs and trees that are spaced, you know, feet apart, but if that area is covered with a nice blanket of mulch, looks lovely. You don't have to have continuous color.
I tell you, my husband came home and he says, oh my gosh, you know, our yard looks so good. And all it was mulch. It just cleaned everything up. I weed it beforehand. I weed it for 2 days. I weeded everything I could possibly find to weed. And then we put the mulch on it, and it just made it look clean and beautiful. And
it does. I did it right before my house was on a garden tour in May. And if you're going to have a big event at your house, if you're having, you know, a wedding or an anniversary party or any kind of big event that you're hosting and your garden's going to be on display, boy, that's like ironing a fresh tablecloth. If you can put out mulch or top off your existing mulch with a little bit of a fresh layer, it really is like putting out, don't you think, like putting out a freshly ironed tablecloth.
Oh, it's amazing the difference. Yeah. From one day to the next, it just like, wow, it looks like I got new plants.
Yeah.
And the plants look prettier, and it's just the background of that beautiful mulch.
Yeah, and it's tidy.
It's tidy, and it saves a lot of water.
A ton of water. And even if you don't have the budget to mulch your whole yard, but you want to save, for instance, like I want to save, you know, certain fruit trees and my rose bushes, mulch those. Just go and get, you know, some bags of mulch if you can't afford to buy a whole truck full. And just mulch those particular things that you want to save. Because even just mulching, you know, the few feet around those plants will help those plants immensely.
You know, Tina, you and I have large yards, mm-hmm. and not everybody does. So not everybody needs as much as we do. You
right.
just need to put a couple inches down, and if you can go big box store or whatever, buy some mulch and just put it around those important plants like Tina was talking about. You'll save on your water bill. It'll look like you've gardened. It will look prettier. It's just a nice thing to do.
Yeah, and it's healthy for your plants too, because it not only saves water and keeps the weeds down, but as it decomposes, it releases nutrients into the soil. So you're actually slow feeding those plants when you add mulch as well. So I know we talk about mulch a lot, and people are probably sick of hearing it, but especially in this drought, we can't say it enough. You really, really want to try to save the plants, because hopefully, you know, they're saying it's an El Nino year, so hopefully this winter we'll get some rain, and it would really be a shame if we lost our trees and our plants that we love, like roses, this summer.
Yeah.
So devote your water to that and your veggies and mulch everything, and you should be good.
You know, Tina, I was going to ask your opinion on this. If you decided to go to California natives.
Yeah.
And you have a lawn.
Yeah.
You know, you probably don't want to plant your natives into the fall. And you want to start letting your lawn possibly start taking that water away from it and start letting it dry if you're looking for a place to save water.
Yeah, absolutely. If you can stand the look of a brown lawn, that's the first thing that I would let die, is the lawn. Because although I wouldn't take it out and plant
now,
because in July and August it's going to be hot. And a lot of native plants actually are fairly dormant in the summer, and they've done that as a survival mechanism. They go dormant when there's no water. And so it can be tough to get those native plants established in the summer, because any new plant needs water, and yet the native plants don't really want to be watered in the summer. So you've got this catch-22 situation.
Right, and you don't want to be spending more money on watering things, more your water money,
exactly,
on watering more in the summertime, because new plants have to be watered more often.
Yeah, and even when you do convert your yard to drought-tolerant landscaping, which we hope a lot of people will do, when you do it in the fall, you still need to water those natives. They need water when they're young until they get a root system established. But the reason we suggest that you plant them in the fall, in October, November, is because we usually start getting rain in November, and of course December, January, February. And that is when the native plants naturally start to grow like crazy, is when they get that natural rainfall. So if we don't get natural rainfall, of course, you'll have to irrigate. But like I said, the plants are, you know, genetically have evolved to grow in those months very actively. So I think that you're fighting less of a battle if you wait until fall to rip out your lawn. Although, if you've got to save your water for other things and you can stand looking at the brown lawn, let it die this summer. You're going to take it out in October anyway.
Good point. Hey, Tina, we just have to take a moment and say a couple things. And it's that time again to say the opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 in Irvine. Well, that was our little, what we had to say for our show, because we are on the air and we need to follow our regulations. But also right now, I might as well give everybody our website if they want to look up any information or if they have any questions. Our website is www.ucceMG.com. And if you have questions, you want to write a question in, go to our hotline, and it's the address to our hotline is hotline. It's hotline at ucceMG.com. We have a great group of master gardeners that man that hotline, and they love looking up information and answering questions, and they're really good at it. So feel free to, if you have any questions at all about water tolerance, about what to do in the garden in July, just any questions in general, shoot them an email. They're a really, really nice group of people, and they'd be glad to help you out.
Oh, and they know so much. And if they don't know it, they'll research it. So it's a great place to get your questions answered. Well, should we go back and finish up our care of our decorative gardens?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so We talked about saving the most important pieces of our decorative gardens, our trees and any, you know, great shrubs that we want to keep.
Grandmas, great-grandmas, whatever.
Exactly.
If you want to keep it, pick that out. Yeah. Pick and choose.
Exactly. Or if you have a cherished camellia or azalea plant, anything that has a lot of significance to you or is gorgeous, you know, allocate your water to saving those things.
You know, we're going to be getting our water bills, depending on where you are in Orange County, you're going to be getting your water bill soon, and that'll kind of give you an idea how much you really need to cut back.
Yeah, it will, and we don't know. It's all new. We're figuring all this stuff out, so all we can do right now is try and give you some guidelines and some philosophies to enact once you get over the panic of looking at that of that water bill and saying, oh no, what can I do? So hopefully our listeners are getting a few strategies that will help them cope with the water shortages that we have now. But if we are continuing to have some areas of our yard, for instance, for me, saving the roses is important. And so caring for the roses this time of year is something I need to do in addition to just giving them some water. I need to continue to deadhead them. I need to continue to look for pests because we know that we often get some aphids or other pests that attack the rose bushes. Hopefully in July it's pretty sunny and we don't get a lot of June gloom and damp weather, so that means the fungal diseases will be hopefully less, but you might still see a fair amount of rust and maybe a little powdery mildew, and you can spray some antifungal liquid solutions that you can get at the nursery or a big box retailer if those are looking like they're getting out of control. But to be honest, most of the time I just pull off the leaves that are heavily affected and throw them in the trash. And if you don't overhead water, then you don't really have a lot of those fungal diseases.
And if you get confused, you could also write us an email. Again, I'm going to say our hotline number again. It's hotline@uccmg.com. And again, our hotline people could answer those kind of questions and just about any kind of question you have. And if they don't have an answer for you, they really try hard to find out what the answer is.
Yeah, and they're a great group of people, and I know people are going to have a lot of questions about how to still have a beautiful, attractive yard while using plants that use less water, and they should be able to help you out with that. And also, I think another thing that we can do, and I think I mentioned this last month, is, you know, some of us just have a real connection to some of the traditional flowering plants. You know, we remember our grandmas having petunias or marigolds in their summer garden, and we're just really kind of attached to those. And so what I suggested last month, and I'll reiterate that again today, is pots.
Pots.
You know, if we're being diligent about saving our water when we're showering, I know I'm keeping a bucket in the shower, so when the water is getting warm so that I can take my shower, I just have a bucket to catch that water. And then I take it downstairs and outside, and I water my pots. So you know what? I still have pots that are crammed with all of those beautiful flowering plants that we love in the summer, the cosmos, the petunias, the marigolds, the lobelia, you know, the list goes on, dahlias, the list goes on and on. And so I haven't given up those entirely because they make me just so happy. And they dress up, you know, the entryway to your home or the patio where you eat outside, because this time of year we eat outside all the time.
Same here.
Yeah. So don't think that you can't have that wonderful, happy color. You can, you know, just be diligent in your indoor uses of water. When I boil pasta now, I save that big thing of water and let it cool off, and outside it goes to water the pots.
And I have it in my bucket in my kitchen sink. I have a watering bucket that I bring in, and I just fill it halfway up before the water gets hot, and it waters my plants outside the front door.
Yeah, so there are plenty of ways that we can still have that color. Now, we can't perhaps have, you know, the huge flower bed that was, you know, 30 feet long by 10 feet wide, just filled with colorful annuals. Maybe that's a thing of the past, but we can still have some nice displays in pots. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever traveled to Europe, but when I went for the first time a few years ago, I just adored in the cities every balcony practically was festooned with a flower box.
Isn't it beautiful?
Yes.
It's gorgeous.
And I thought...
And they're not that big.
No.
But it's gorgeous. I took my husband, the first time we went to Italy, I think we were in Venice, he said, honey, there's other things to take pictures of besides balconies with flowers.
No, there's not. Not if you're a master gardener, right?
I was just amazed. These little balconies with these little pots had so much color to them.
And that's, I think, you know, and these are urban areas. I mean, these folks have no plots of land, so... You know that they are not trying to water oodles and oodles of soil. They're just watering these lovely pots and window boxes, and it's gorgeous. So
it's stunning.
I think we need to, you know, not tell ourselves, oh, I'm done with gardening, you know, no water, can't garden anymore. Instead, we need to think about how can we garden? How can we be clever about gardening and using less water? And boy, I'll tell you what, I've got three balconies at my house that don't have window boxes on, but I think they're going to get some.
There you go.
Yeah.
And so you don't have to carry your water all the way downstairs.
Exactly, because two of my balconies all of the balconies are upstairs, right?
So. And, you know, and placing things by the front door, your back door, or your entrance to your property, just a couple pots there, and that's where people see them, where your eye goes to. And then you can water them with your sink water, your pasta water, or your shower water.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's an idea. We don't want anyone to be sad because we know that being in the garden and tending flowers and veggies is really good for your soul and your mind. And great. Did you know that soil, I just read this, and this reminded me of it, that soil actually, some bacteria in soil actually contains the same endorphins that Valium does?
No.
Yes. And so you, not Valium, gosh, I'm drawing a blank on the, it's a feel-good drug whose name I'm forgetting now. But in any event, they have done actual studies. So one of the reasons you feel so good when you go out and mess around in the soil is that you're actually, through the pores of your skin, getting, and they say even through the air when you're, you know, turning the soil, you're actually... acquiring this bacteria that has the endorphins that make you, it's those feel-good endorphins.
And do you know those bacteria also are supposed to make you stay healthier?
Are they?
Yes.
Well, there you go, just in general.
In
we
general.
We know gardening is good. So we don't want folks to give up gardening. We want them to just garden smarter.
Be mindful. Be mindful and you can still do a lot. My goodness, we're having such a wonderful time here. So we've gotten the flower garden going, and now, gosh, what else should we talk about? I think we're going to be talking about maybe our grasses. Now, there's some of us who are thinking about, do I really want to keep my grass? So that's a big decision what you have to make. And if you're going to keep your grass, what do you do about keeping your grass? How much do you water it? How do you take care of it? And then you have to choose how important it is to you right now, and you have to look at that water bill.
Yeah, and sorry, I had to excuse myself for a second. Got a little tickle in my throat. Yeah, and we're really trying to encourage folks to eliminate grass if they can. But if you have a reason to have grass, you have some animals that you want to have a little patch for, or children that you want to have a patch for, then you do need to continue to care for that grass, and hopefully it won't be too huge of an area and you'll be able to afford the water for it. And so in July, of course, you're going to have to pay attention to the watering of that grass. And a lot of us are only able to water on, you know, certain days of the week, you know, 2 days a week, a lot of communities have gone to. And so you're going to need to cycle your water is what I advise, instead of just turning it on for 10 minutes and then you're not going to water again for a few more days. I suggest turning it on for 5 minutes and then having your sprinkler system water all of the rest of your yard, and then have a second cycle that same day with another 5 minutes on the lawn, or whatever is recommended based on the type of sprinklers that you have. So do try to do cycling. The other thing, of course, is to raise your mower height to its very highest setting, or tell your gardener to. If you don't cut the grass short, then the grass, its roots are more shaded from the longer blades, and therefore the ground won't dry out as fast. So that's another thing that you could do.
That's a great idea.
And then finally, if you have a cool season lawn like a fescue, like Marathon, this is the last month that you would probably fertilize it, because the cool season grasses don't like super hot weather that we have in August and September. So early in the month, you can give it a light feeding, not too much fertilizer, and then don't fertilize the cool season grasses the rest of the season. If you have a warm season grass like St. Augustine, now is when they're growing like crazy, and they will grow, you know, like crazy all summer. They're meant to grow in the hot weather. So you will want to fertilize those throughout the summer to keep them growing and having the nutrients they need. But again, we're really encouraging folks, and I think your water bill will probably encourage you further, to replace as much lawn as you can with a drought-tolerant substitute. And as we get towards fall, we're going to devote a few shows to how to switch from grass to some drought-tolerant alternatives. But right now, we're just going to try and get you through the summer.
Get you through the summer. Get all of us through the summer. This is a, you know, it's a new place for not only our audience here, but it's a new place for us as master gardeners to be so mindful. We've always talked about being drought tolerant and mindful, but now it's really pushes coming to shove.
It is. It's a new world for all of us, and we, you know, all have to keep a positive attitude about it. I sometimes we'll feel a little bit sad thinking that, you know, I can't do some things that I used to do, you know, like plant my flower beds as extensively as I did in the past. And at first it makes me a little sad, but then I think, you know, there's other things that are just as attractive, and I don't need to do that. I can find another outlet for my garden creativity. And I'll tell you, one of the things that I've really gotten into, even before this drought, but the last couple of years, is succulents. I never really appreciated succulents much before. I always thought of them as cactus.
Me too. I thought a succulent was a cactus.
And I thought it was spiky and kind of unfriendly.
And I don't live in the desert, so to speak, and I have animals and I don't want spiky things, but there are beautiful succulents out there.
There are, and I am still not a huge fan of the spiky ones, although I think in the landscape, like where I live, the common areas are now being more heavily landscaped with some of the prickly pear cactus and the agaves. And in the landscape, you know, from a distance where I don't have to worry about running into them.
Or children or pets,
yeah.
And animals. And
I think that they are a great addition. For one thing, they're very fire resistant. And so, you know, the cactus are full of water. And so in the areas where we live, Southern California, where we are faced with fire every year, they're a great alternative for landscaping, you know, big common areas that are surrounding our home developments. But I've started to do succulents in pots because when we travel especially, I want to make it a little bit easy on the poor person that I'm suckering in to take care of my yard, you know. And if I have too many pots of flowers, then it just becomes a chore for that person. Now, while I may like spending half a day watering, you know, most people would find it a chore.
Well, actually, I find it a chore. I don't have a lot of pots, and the pots I do have, I am putting succulents because I live a bit inland, and I can't forget to water if I have. You're a little closer to the coast, so it's a little more forgiving. But where I live, it's a little hotter, and there's some beautiful succulents out there. I live in an equestrian community, and by my front door, I have two sets of boots. And I don't ride horses, but it's where I live, and inside my boots, I have these beautiful succulents that are coming up, flowering over in the middle, and that's what I keep those by my front door as my flowers, and that's where one of my pots of water goes when I'm warming up water for the dishes. I go out there and water those, and they're forgiving.
They are so
forgiving, and they're beautiful. You have them outside your front door. They're gorgeous.
I do.
They're stunning.
Yeah, you can follow the same philosophy in planting succulent pots as you do with planting anything else, and that's, you know, we've said it before on the show, the thriller, filler, spiller philosophy, and you choose a succulent, Sticks of Fire, Euphorbia is a great one to choose as your filler. It looks like these orange fingers, and it grows a couple feet tall, and so I love putting that in as the thriller, you know, the centerpiece of a pot. And then you can fill it in with some smaller aeoniums, and those, of course, come in all different kinds of colors.
The colors! I never knew the colors and the textures, the variety you have with succulents.
Gosh.
It's just stunning.
Yeah, the aeoniums come in everything from almost black to beautiful purples to lime green.
Lime greens.
And variegated. You know, some of them have, you know, a couple of colors, you know, in them. And then finally, the spiller, there are so many succulents that will spill over the edge of the container. And so you end up with this very interesting, colorful, believe it or not, container. And then another bonus is that some of these succulents actually bloom, and you'll get some for real flowers a couple times a year.
Yeah, they're just absolutely beautiful, and the low water, if you're thinking about doing low water, and they're easy to take care of, and oh my goodness, you could just probably just Google it and look at all the different choices you have.
Well, there's so many places you can go. Some of the, you know, great nurseries around town, you know, have some stunning examples. Sherman Gardens, of course, has a whole succulent garden, which is, have you ever seen their succulent garden?
It's beautiful.
Oh my gosh, it's... They've arranged succulents almost like a painting, with swaths of color and textures, and just year-round, it just looks gorgeous. That's the other thing I love about these succulent pots. You know, when I was doing my annual pots, you know, you had to change them out twice a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
You put a cool season in for the winter and a warm season in for the summer. These succulents, you plant them and you leave them for a couple years. You don't have to do a whole lot to them at all.
Yeah.
How long have you had your boots planted?
Oh, I've had my boots for several years.
They're darling. I've seen them. They're absolutely darling.
And it's just easy to do. I went to the thrift store, and I just got my boots at the thrift store, and I went, what the heck, and planted them. And where my front door is, it gets really, really hot. It's a driveway coming in, and I can cook a plant in a day.
Oh, wow.
So I just have not had success having something pretty by my front door.
Yeah.
And those succulents have survived, and they look good, and I get compliments, and I'm like, ha! Huh. And it doesn't take much water.
It doesn't. And as Katrina said, they are so forgiving, so forgiving. You know, you forget to water them for 2 weeks, and, you know, they may not look as perky as they do with a little bit of water, but they won't totally die out, which is pretty stunning. So they are growing on me a lot.
You're going to hear us talk a lot more about drought tolerant and about succulents and what we can do in future shows, because it's where our landscapes are going.
Yeah, and it's where they're going, and it's also where we came from. If you've ever taken a trip to the missions, in one of the California missions, and you take a look at those landscapes, most of them have preserved the landscaping theme that they had from long ago. So you'll see at those missions a lot of cactus, a lot of pepper trees, California peppers, other native trees. And then if they are still maintaining a vegetable garden, that's where they use their water. But their general landscape is pretty much a lot of, you know, DG pathways and flowers that maybe some roses. Roses are surprisingly drought tolerant, actually.
And you'll see those at the mission, too?
And you'll see those at the mission. So that's where we came from also. You know, the first settlers to come to California didn't have access to imported water, and so they were pretty thrifty in what they planted.
And there are some beautiful, beautiful California natives.
Oh, there are.
I've had to change my gears where I'm going from. And at first I went, oh, my God, you want me to grow dry grass weeds? And I have to admit, that's why I was like, oh, yuck. And now it's like, and there's more and more available now at the nurseries. I think the nurseries realize that this is where the trend is going to be. And so the more nurseries are going to be carrying more of the drought-tolerant plants, we're going to have more choices. There'll be more education about it, and because there's going to be less of demand for the other plants.
There is. I think that this is going to be a permanent change for us. We may this drought hopefully will end. But I think in the future, we are just going to be wiser about how we landscape our property, and our tastes are going to change. We're going to cherish this new palette. And I've seen many gardens that I think are way prettier than lawns that are using drought-tolerant plants.
There's some stunning gardens out there.
Absolutely. And we also will have to, you know, take a look at having more seasonal differences here. You know, we're used to in California having this color all year long because we could, because we had water and we could. And, you know, we may need to get used to having, you know, back east they have no color in the winter because of the freezing cold temperatures. And in California, we may have less color in the summer because we have less water in the summer. But that's okay. We may just need to get used to that.
Just adjust.
Yeah, exactly.
Just might have to adjust to it.
Yeah. So, but we can still have fun gardening. And we can still grow food. Let's grow lots of food.
Oh, that's one of my places I'm saving my water for.
Yeah.
If I have to give up my grass, it's one thing, but I'm not giving up my tomatoes.
Yeah. Nope. Let's grow food first.
Grow food. Gosh, well, Tina, we're getting close to the end of our hour, and I think one thing I want to leave everybody with is right now, go out and look at your sprinkler system. Go out and look at your systems and see what you have and see how you can conserve. I was walking in my neighborhood recently, and I saw somebody watering the street.
Yikes.
And I'm like, oh, my goodness. I'm wondering if they're at home and they actually see this. And so go out. If you're not home when the sprinkler's on, be home when the sprinkler's on sometime and check it out and see really where your water's going and really how much do you need and are you over watering. There's probes that you could put into the ground to see really how much water is there and do you really need that much water. A lot of plants don't need as much water as we're giving them.
They don't. And even if you're not up, because most of us have our sprinklers programmed to come on at 5 a.m. or something like that, all automatic sprinkler systems that I've seen have a manual button on them. So you can push that manual button on a Saturday, you know, at 11 a.m. when you happen to be home, and just look at your sprinkler system.
I do that periodically, just to see if there's a broken sprinkler, to see if water's gathering in any place, to see if there's anything that needs to be adjusted. And my water bill is lower than a lot of people that have less than what I have. And it's one reason is because I am mindful.
That's right. And we have so gotten used to just letting that automatic sprinkler system do its thing that we've wasted a lot of water historically. So as Katrina says, if we can just be mindful and pay attention, I think it'll be pretty easy for us to save some water.
Well, I think we're coming to the end of our hour, Tina. It went fast today, didn't it?
It did. Well, thanks again for listening, and we hope you'll tune in again to In the Garden with UCCE Master Gardeners.
And last but not least, if you have any questions, you could contact us at hotline@uccemg.com or see our website, www.uccemg.com.